Dear listeners, please note that this episode was recorded prior to the government appointing two election commissioners on March 14, 2024.
This is the In Focus podcast from The Hindu.
Hello and welcome to The Hindu's In Focus podcast with me, Amit Barua, your host for this episode. The resignation of Arun Goyal as election commissioner just ahead of the 2024 Lok Sabha elections has created ripples in Indian politics. Possibly for the first time since 1993, a single member election commission is currently supervising poll preparations in the world's largest democracy. There is no word on why Mr. Goyal, who was handpicked by the BJP government, quit, but some media reports point to differences with the chief election commissioner, Rajiv Kumar. So what does Mr. Goyal's resignation spell? Will the government rush to appoint two election commissioners under the new law that gives the political executive a majority in the selection process? Do election commissioners grow a spine after taking office? To discuss these issues, I have with me today independent journalist and author Nilanjan Mukhopadhyay. Welcome to the In Focus podcast, Nilanjan.
Thank you, Amit, for calling me and speaking on this very important subject.
Nilanjan, what do you make of Mr. Goyal's resignation?
You know, it is actually very difficult to say as to why he has resigned. But I can say that if his service, which we all know, was till December 2027, and he's resigned despite that, then this could be only because of two reasons. That is what it comes to my mind. The first is that he has been assured of a better position. When I say he has been assured of a better position, obviously it means by somebody within the government. Or the second factor could be that he is very angry for certain reason and he thinks that his position has become untenable within the election commission and he resigned.
You mean to say he has some major differences possibly with the chief election commissioner and functioning is no longer possible? Is that something which might have happened?
That is one of the things. The other is that there could have been a conflict with the executive also, because we know that since 2019, the executive has been straying into the powers of the election commission. You remember that the election commission commissioners were actually called to the prime minister's office to discuss a subject in 2019. So this government has actually not been very respectful towards autonomous institutions. And given the fact that the election commission has a very peculiar position within the system, I think, you know, that that possibility should not be ruled out, that there was some kind of a problem also with people in the government.
Right.
But we can only speculate. Because until and unless actually somebody decides to formally inform the public, there's no way that the truth will be known. Till the time the government does not, or Mr. Goyal himself does not make the reason public, there will be all kind of speculation, and I guess we will be, everybody of us is entitled to her or his favorite theory.
So, Nilanjan, speculation aside, what do you think that a single member election commission means for the conduct of our Lok Sabha polls, which is, you know, a notification for the polls, could theoretically be issued any day now?
You know, if you look at it by law, there is absolutely no bar on a single election commissioner, the CEC in this particular case, actually conducting the elections. Till 1989, as we all know, there used to be a one-member election commissioner. Then it became a two-member. There was a series of controversies from 1989 to 1993. Eventually, then you had a three-member election commission with one CEC and two other election commissioners. So it has been there. There have been several occasions where the issue of unanimous functioning has come into a major discussion, because it has become very clear that there are wide divergences within the Election Commission. Somehow or the other, the Election Commission, as far as the top is concerned, there have been several occasions where there have been differences. But, you know, the Election Commission is, if you study it very deeply, is structurally a very well organized and structured institution. And the institution has its own way of actually preparing for elections, which is done in a very routine and a regular manner. And the people who work in the Election Commission, who have been there for much longer period than what the election commissioners are, they are essentially appointed after retiring from government service and then till the time that they are 65. But there are others who have actually spent decades in the Election Commission. And you can always sense, if you interact with them, that I've had the fortune to have interacted with some people within the Election Commission. There's a tremendous amount of pride in the fact that we are the ones who decide, who supervise India's fate, in the sense that we are the ones who actually decides that who is eligible, who is not eligible, which election is fair, which is not fair. So that pride is there. And it is very important for this pride to survive. So I can only hope that that the government goes about appointing the two vacancies in a fairly transparent manner, and ensuring that there is no dissent from the member from the opposition, that is Mr. Adhir Ranjan Chaudhary. He has asked that before the meeting, let the shortlist, which is being prepared by the search committee, which by law has to be followed, it should be circulated. And I think that is a very fair demand. Now, if this also becomes just the way that the Kovind committee, which was appointed in September last for the One Nation, One Poll, a special committee was appointed. So he also asked that without terms of reference, how can I be asked to become a member of the committee? So he didn't eventually join the committee. So obviously, credibility gets eroded. So in this case, if the meeting is there and Mr. Modi is there, the Prime Minister is there, along with his chosen Union Cabinet Minister, just the two of them are there and they end up appointing two election commissioners, the choice is definitely not going to be as credible as in the case that if there was the opposition member also present in the meeting.
Nilanjan, in 2022, actually, Mr. Arun Goyal was appointed even as the Supreme Court was hearing the matter, you know, the matter of appointments. And we now have a situation where, on the 15th of March, the Supreme Court is supposed to hear the issue of appointments. And the petitioners have desired that the Supreme Court Chief Justice should be restored to that three-member panel. So in such a situation, do you think the government should go ahead with the appointment or should it wait for an order from the Supreme Court?
It is actually very difficult to say that whether they should wait or not. I would say that possibly, given the fact that it is on the 15th, they should not make the appointments prior to the 15th. They should go to the hearing with an open mind. They should state their case and listen to what the petitioners have to say. And but also the fact is that this cannot go on endlessly, that the Supreme Court did give a ruling which was changed by a law which was passed by the government and by Parliament. I still have not been able to understand the logic of the government to change the composition as was recommended by the Supreme Court. That is, the Chief Justice of India should be a member of this appointing committee. Now, the way the government struck out the Chief Justice of India from this committee and included one cabinet minister, it presents the Chief Justice of India as an adversary in an adversarial role, which I do not think is very good for the image of Indian democracy. We have to understand that this government in any case has the reputation and the image of someone which has not really nurtured institutions and the Indian democracy. That laws, you can only keep on trying to improve laws. There are, of course, laws guiding the Election Commission of India, and it is the responsibility of the executive to keep on thinking of ways by which you can improve upon laws, not make it more retrograde. So something which is more transparent, something which is more fair, given the fact there is a Prime Minister, there is somebody from the opposition, and then from the Chief Justice of India, there could not have been a fairer selection committee to appoint the election commissioners and the Chief Election Commissioner. But if the government has actually changed it, then obviously it means that there is something, some ulterior motive. That is what would be understood by most people. And if the opposition makes such a criticism that this government actually wants to back the election commission with their officers who are just going to parrot what the government wants to be said, then it is very unfortunate that if the government is willing to live with that accusation.
And what is your sense, Nilanjan? I mean, from whatever you say, it looks as if the political executive wants to hold a majority in this committee, which would lead some people to believe that they want to pack the commission with people of their choice who would do their bidding.
I mean, that is unfortunately the way people are going to perceive it, because that is what the government does. You know, I was giving you the example of the Kovind committee. What was the tearing hurry for everything to be done in that very dramatic manner in the middle of calling a special session without of parliament, without actually divulging what was the agenda? This government actually does most of its decisions are to create a big hype of its actions and trying to mystify everything. And as I was saying also earlier, you know, that it definitely wants to have a majority in almost every decision-making body.
And how would you look at it from the point of view of independence and credibility of elections? I mean, India has prided itself on being the largest democracy, a hugely successful functioning democracy. Do you think it has any implications for this?
You know, I find it a huge paradox, Amit, that on one hand, you have the government of India taking immense pride in the fact that the Election Commission of India is invited by several nations to come and train their personnel, train their officers to hold free and fair elections. Yet on the other side, we are undermining our own electoral process. Few years ago, let me take you back to 2018, there was a by-election in the Kairana Lok Sabha constituency in Western UP. There were allegations that the returning officer did some kind of jamming of the EVMs at that point. There was an investigation, the details of which we need not actually go into, but that returning officer, after investigations by the Election Commission, was debarred for the entire career from doing any electoral, from being assigned to any electoral duty. If there has been a subsequent review of the decision, that is a separate matter. But at that point, that decision was made. So what image, Amit, would that decision have conveyed to the world outside? That the NDA government, National Democratic Alliance government, appointed a returning officer for the election, who was also the district magistrate of Saharanpur, and he was accused of bungling during the by-elections and several booths. There were repolls there ordered because there was allegation that the EVMs had been tampered with. So this paradox has to be removed and only can be done only by the government and by no one else.
Nilanjan, we also have, the Supreme Court's two orders on, the electoral bonds issue and, asking for many details to be made public. Strangely, the Election Commission itself has been rather silent on this matter.
Election Commission has been silent on that matter because the Election Commission would come into play only after the State Bank of India submits the details as to who donated these bonds. and then to which party and how it was encashed. So now it is, we have to wait for the Election Commission of India to put all the details in the on their website, and only then can we actually get into analysis, because it is not going to be so simple that we get a list of electoral bonds and then we can tally, okay, this bond was paid bought by so-and-so company and given to party X or party Y and it was encashed on such a day. So all the petitioners who have done, after the data comes up, you know, is put up in the public domain, I think they will have a lot of work to do to be able to draw conjectures, if we have to get anywhere close to understand that which are the various companies or individuals who have made very large and substantial donations to various political parties and how it, you know, how it is all distributed between them. That is known in terms of the basic, that which party got how many, you know, bonds valued at how much. But in terms of that, who are the people who bought these bonds, some information would be available, but it will be in the realm of conjecture and speculation.
No, the question that actually I wanted to pose to you, Nilanjan, was that from the point of view of transparency, I mean, these are, of course, details. And as you rightly point out, you know, some details will be out, some may not be known, and so on and so forth. But in terms of transparency, the whole principle of the electoral bond, that the citizen doesn't have the right to know, you know, where the funding is coming from. On that issue, the Election Commission has also been silent.
No, it has been silent because the Election Commission in the last 10 years, you know, has become more tilted towards the executive, towards the political leadership of the country, you know, towards the ruling party. It is definitely not as neutral as it used to be prior to 2014. So given the fact that the neutrality is suspect, you know, and we are even, you know, actually we can start listing out instances, you know, where petitions were made to the Election Commission that such and such has made a speech, you know, which violates the model code of conduct, but no action has been taken against them. Everybody knows that what happened to the Election Commission, Mr. Ashok Lavasa. It is all very well known and part of recent history. It's only very recently that after his tenure got over with the World Bank that he has started making his position known publicly by writing articles here and there. But I do not know whether he is as yet willing to speak about the reason as to why he resigned from the Election Commission, and then what really transpired. Why did the government get, you know, behind his family members, putting all kinds of investigative agencies to examine what they were up to? So obviously this ploy of using investigative agencies is something which this government has used, not just against their political opposition, but also against officers, you know, who they want to fall in line.
So, Nilanjan, so as we head, you know, into Lok Sabha 2024, you know, what would be the few benchmarks that you would like to see as far as the independent functioning of the Election Commission is concerned?
To begin with, the election commissioners per se and the chief election commissioner are the signing authorities of the detailed schedule. So the government should not get unduly worried about filling up these vacancies in some manner or the other. It should go through the entire process of transparency. While the electoral process is done, there is a certain time schedule which has to be stuck to, because parliament has to be, the new parliament has to be convened, a new government has to be put in place, the budget has to be presented. There are all kinds of constitutional necessities. So whichever dates, possibly the dates, by now the Election Commission of India would have possibly also zeroed in on maybe 2 or maximum 3 days on which they are going to have the official announcement to declare the schedule. So that should go on as per schedule. There should not be any disturbance. While the government, not sitting on appointing the two election commissions, but they should go about it in a very transparent manner. If Adhir Ranjan Chaudhary has asked for the shortlist, then it should be prepared and provided to him. And then a meeting should be held. He may disagree at the moment, and if be willing to file a dissenting note, it should be recorded in the records of the meeting, and the announcement should be made. Whatever the Supreme Court decides on the 15th, the government must follow it and not immediately in a very knee-jerk manner challenge it. So I think that is the first thing which has to be done. The second is that the government has to ensure, the Election Commission has to ensure throughout the entire electoral process that campaigning is in the spirit of within the Model Code of Conduct. There are no violations and there are no allegations of favoritism towards the ruling party and its allies like in the previous elections, most importantly in 2019 and various other state elections also which have happened. That should not be repeated. So we should actually have an election in electoral process which is seen to somewhat restore the neutrality of the Election Commission and the election commissioners. They cannot be seen to be tilting towards the ruling party in any circumstances. So I think that is something which we expect the Election Commission to do.
Well, Nilanjan Mukhopadhyay, thank you so much for your views on these key issues. And as elections approach, these benchmarks will prove important. Thank you so much for talking to the Hindus in Focus podcast, Nilanjan.
Thank you, Amit. It was a pleasure speaking with you after a long time. Thank you.
In Focus will be back soon with analysis of the biggest news issues. In the meantime, you can find our podcast on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, and other platforms. Just search for In Focus by The Hindu. We'll see you soon.